We're talking about gay marriage here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In a landmark ruling in 2015, the Supreme Court struck down all state bans on same-sex marriage and legalized it in all 50 states. This week, Taiwan became the first country in Asia to legally recognize same-sex unions. And we want to know how marriage equality is getting along here in the U.S. We're at 800-642-1234. This is surfacing as South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg makes a bid for the presidency. Is Buttigieg bringing greater representation to the LGBTQ community? Peter Hart Brinson thinks about this as an associate professor of sociology and communication and journalism at UW-Eau Claire. His book is called The Gay Marriage Generation, How the LGBTQ Movement Transformed American Culture. Peter, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, draw some now and then comparisons for us. How does our country view gay marriage now compared to how we saw it a few decades ago?
The earliest recorded measurement of public opinion that we have about gay marriage was from 1988. And back then, only about 12% of Americans supported gay marriage. For comparison's sake, about a similar percentage of American voters believe in Bigfoot. And so back then, the idea of same-sex marriage was nonsense. But now, about two-thirds of Americans support same-sex marriage, and of course it's legalized in all 50 states, as you mentioned. So it really has been nothing short of a transformation in attitudes in a very short period of time.
Can you identify a particular age group or a generation that is responsible largely for this shift toward accepting same-sex marriage?
My research showed that the big shift happened with Americans coming of age after 1992 or so. So if we assume that most Americans kind of develop their fundamental attitudes and worldviews that stick with them over the years, about the time they turn 18, then that would include people born roughly after 1974. People born after 1974 grew up in a society that defined sexuality as an identity, as part of who you are, whereas older Americans grew up imagining sexuality to be a behavior, is something that you do. So the group of people that we can call the gay marriage generation support gay marriage in part because they simply understand sexuality in a different way than their elders.
Oh, because they grew up around it, where it was accepted, where it wasn't a conspiracy theory, perhaps, in a way.
That's right. If you imagine homosexuality to be just part of who you are, then there's no logical reason to deny someone the right to marry. In fact, Americans thought about gay marriage in a way that in a similar way that they thought about race. This is just one way in which people differ from one another. By contrast, since older Americans thought of it as being a behavior like gambling, they tended not to support gay marriage because, well, why would you change an institution that has been around for thousands of years simply because people prefer to do things differently? So people's attitudes about gay marriage were certainly logical given the ways that they conceived of what they were talking about.
We're talking the history to the present day and the topic of gay marriage with UW-Eau Claire's Peter Hart Brinson as our guide. He's a sociologist. Do you identify within the LGBTQ community, or do you have a friend or family member who does? Do you think the government should do more for gay rights? What needs to change? We're at 800-642-1234. You can join in by email ideas@wpr.org. Peter, let's fast forward now to 2015. The U.S. Supreme Court rules that gay marriage is a constitutional right. You know, 4 years removed from that, have the marital rights of same-sex couples evolved or faced new barriers, even though same-sex marriage is legal in all the states?
The marital rights of same-sex couples seem to be on a firm foundation. We have witnessed the rise of religious freedom laws that would allow institutions to deny service to, in this case, same-sex couples on the basis of moral and religious beliefs. And the constitutional status of those laws is currently contested. In terms of federal and state law pertaining to marriage, I'm not aware of any significant challenges to those. However, it is true that lesbians and gays are just as vulnerable to employment discrimination and housing discrimination as they were prior to marriage legalization. And that depends upon what state they lived and what municipality they live in. So other than same-sex marriage being legalized nationwide, there still remain some issues, some unsettled issues with respect to LGBTQ rights.
How are we seeing housing or employment discrimination play out? What do you see there?
Housing and employment discrimination really depends quite a bit on the attitudes of one's peers, the people who live in your environment, your boss, your landlord, your mortgage company. And so as people's attitudes towards a group of people change, you're likely to see less discrimination. I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't seen the data to show whether or not discrimination is up or down. If we agree that discrimination is a bad thing and something to get that we would like to get rid of as a society, then certainly more positive attitudes towards lesbians and gays that we've seen in society over the past several decades is a positive trend.
We've seen the entertainment industry play a role in changing attitudes. And let's rewind now to 1997. Ellen DeGeneres famously came out on her sitcom, Ellen, and 42 million viewers witnessed her do it.
I'm 35 years old. I'm so afraid to tell people. I mean, I just... Susan, I'm gay.
So, Peter, how did this moment on Ellen's show shift our perception of LGBTQ people?
For Americans who didn't know anyone personally who identified as lesbian or gay, this was the first time that they would have seen anyone come out and admit who they are. That's a powerful moment, and it's witnessing someone at their perhaps their most vulnerable state and admitting to what was back then most certainly a stigmatized aspect of who they are and risking social disapproval or marginalization by the people who are hearing them come out. And so for a lot of Americans, being able to see a celebrity like Ellen or a fictional character even to come out in front of millions of people, the potential that that had to change people's minds about homosexuality was really quite large. And my research shows that in the entertainment industry, the ways that lesbians and gays were portrayed in the media starting during the 1990s was much more positive and sympathetic than it had been in the decades prior to that.
Talking with UW-Eau Claire sociologist Peter Hart Brinson. He wrote the book, The Gay Marriage Generation. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Do you have a same-sex partner? Are you married? Did you have to wait to be married because of the law? And what do you think of the way our country handles same-sex unions? Do you feel you have the same rights as an opposite-sex couple? Call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about same-sex marriage and societal views here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've watched this issue unfold on the presidential campaign trail. Democratic candidate Pete Buttigieg has talked openly about the freedom to marry his partner. Chasten Glessman, and they've been married for almost a year. Here's Glessman on CBS Sunday Morning last month talking about why gay marriage is historic, but that when it really comes down to it, sexuality doesn't matter in the day-to-day issues that come up in married life.
We passed marriage equality. I don't think I have to answer for my marriage anymore, but I do enjoy going out there with Pete and showing people that, you know, a gay marriage is just like a straight marriage. I mean, we have our same spousal quarrels over laundry and who takes the trash out and, you know, who forgot to pay the bill this week.
Are you a baby boomer or a Gen Xer? Have you seen gay marriage evolve? How rapid do you think this change has been? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Peter Hart Brinson is an associate professor at UW-Eau Claire. He stays with us. So going back to the presidential candidate, Pete Buttigieg, and his husband, they are recently featured on the cover of Time magazine under the headline First Family. Does having an openly gay presidential candidate tell us anything about where we are culturally right now?
Yeah, I think it does. And the quote you played from Pete Buttigieg sort of hits the nail on the head. It would almost be unimaginable that his candidacy would be as promising as it is right now without the 2015 nationwide legalization. The fact that his relationship is legally recognized in all 50 states means that officially that's not a sign of illegitimacy, I guess you could call it. So I certainly think that it would have been unlikely to see a serious presidential contender from either party who was openly gay or lesbian prior to the nationwide legalization.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Tom joining us from Burlington. Hi, Tom.
When Wisconsin was talking, Iowa was listening, and I used Wisconsin Public Radio to get my message out to create two families. I wanted to see every child have two parents, and Joy Cardine and Kathleen Dunn made sure that message got to Iowa, and when there were three judges in Iowa, that were the first time in our country that legally they made the first step towards the legalization of marriage. And what I would really hope now is that we can get these adoption laws straightened out so that we can every kid in America can have two parents. Children don't care where the parents come from as long as the love is there.
Tom, thanks for the call. Where are we at with adoption and same-sex couples? Do we know, Peter?
I actually don't know that information. I'm unaware of any significant changes in recent decades about adoption laws specifically that are different from marriage. Mm-hmm. Of course, those adoption rights are still contested, and there is no constitutional right to be able to adopt a child, as far as I know. But beyond that, that's your caller raises a really interesting and good point.
Well, we were talking earlier about the entertainment industry, and there was a recent episode of the show, the PBS show Arthur, and his friends attending the wedding of their teacher, Mr. Ratburn, and his male partner. Alabama Public Television chose not to air this episode. Let's take a listen.
Mr. Ratburn is married. I still can't believe it.
Yep, it's a brand new world.
So what do you make of the takeaways from this episode?
excuse me. There were about 16 seconds on that particular episode, which itself is about 12 minutes long, that featured the same-sex couple that is, of course, the subject of the controversy. And the children on Arthur during this episode are much more concerned about whether their teacher getting married is going to make him into a mean teacher. You know, they don't really particularly care who he's getting married to. They just want to make sure that their teacher stays the same, you know, lovable, friendly teacher that they've always had. So the clip that you played is them sort of expressing shock about their teacher going from being a single person to being a married person.
not the fact that it's this is a gay couple here, just showing that, hey, I want my teacher to be the same way they were before they got married.
That's exactly right. I mean, as a children's program, the children can relate to the idea of a teacher being a mean teacher or a good teacher, much more so than they can relate to what is, in some ways, an abstract debate about who can and cannot get married. So a grown-up watching that episode would probably respond very differently than a child watching the episode.
So let's move on to Wisconsin. Wisconsin does have laws protecting people from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation in employment, housing, and public accommodations, but there are no protections from discrimination on the basis of gender identity. Is that commonplace in the U.S.?
It is much more common for protections to exist for sexual orientation rather than for gender identity. And these are actually very different things. We oftentimes lump them together under that acronym LGBTQ, but gender identity is a very different thing from sexual orientation. And if the political debates of the last few years indicate anything, it's that that issue is going to be much more controversial in the coming years than lesbian and gay rights specifically.
And the House recently passed the Equality Act, a bill that would prohibit discrimination against the LGBTQ community in the U.S. What do we know about this legislation?
I actually don't know a whole lot about that personally. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. And then, you know, going back, though, to gay marriage being legal and LGBTQ Americans not fully protected from discrimination, 28 states have no laws protecting people from discrimination in employment and housing. What does this say about our culture and our acceptance of LGBTQ people?
We are certainly very far from a national consensus about homosexuality. Although my book tells a story about a very rapid shift in Americans' attitudes about gay marriage, not everyone agrees on homosexuality. About one-third of Americans, of course, continue to oppose it. And in many communities and in many states, lesbians and gays are still symbols of a morally corrupt culture. And so I don't think that is going to change anytime soon. Depending upon what state you live in, depending upon what city or what county you live in, you are more or less, as a lesbian or gay individual, you are more or less likely to find people who acknowledge your identity and respect it for what it is.
Where do you think Wisconsin has work to do on this issue?
That's a good question. I think Wisconsinites pride themselves on a kind of a collective can-do spirit. Ever since I moved to Wisconsin about 15 years ago, I have always been amazed at Wisconsin's civic spirit. And I think in much of Wisconsin, I do think that lesbians and gays feel much more included than they did 10 years ago, say. So as society has changed as a whole, I think Wisconsin has sort of kept up with the norm.
So has achieving marriage equality done anything to push the needle on other issues? Is acceptance of same-sex marriage an indication of support for more wide-ranging equality?
We have some evidence that marriage equality did actually contribute to more Americans supporting gay rights. In other words, as Americans perceived the legalization of same-sex marriage to be something of a stamp of approval, I think Americans as a whole did actually become more supportive or certainly more tolerant of equal rights. So certainly the legalization of same-sex marriage was a very significant event. It did make a big difference in terms of people's everyday lives.
Well, you wrote a book out of it.
I did indeed, and I like to think it's a decent one.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Hart Brinson is associate professor at UW-Eau Claire, the author of the book, The Gay Marriage Generation, How the LGBTQ Movement Transformed American Culture. And we've been looking at changes in generational and cultural attitudes toward same-sex marriage. Coming up, we look at the latest Wisconsin law enforcement survey and learn how people feel on things like marijuana legalization and immigration. That's after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. The Wisconsin Professional Police Association produces an annual survey on how police officers are doing in the eyes of the community. And the 7th annual poll is out. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Professional Police Association represents local police, sheriff's deputies, other officers. It serves more than 10,000 active and retired members. Are you satisfied with the work of your local police force? What shapes your opinion of the police and your local officers? What's worked in your community to build more trust between police and the public? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Jim Palmer is executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. Jim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
So here we are, the 7th time of this poll. What is the intent behind the survey? Why do you keep doing it each year?
Well, as the state's largest law enforcement group, it really is a concerted effort on our part to play a more proactive role in facilitating and maintaining, more importantly, a public discourse on the issues that impact public safety and law enforcement. I think we've seen a number of controversial incidents involving the police around the country. And it seems like, you know, in the immediate aftermath of those controversial incidents, there's a lot of, you know, public discussion by various parties about, you know, the need for a dialogue. And then, you know, as the media attention kind of diminishes, so does the interest in maintaining that public discourse. And so we thought this was a way for us to play a more proactive role. And, you know, it's something we've been doing, as you said, for 7 years. And we're the only law enforcement group in the country that actually does this. And we think it's served our state well. We think it's served our membership well. And we're very pleased, you know, each year to basically we identify, you know, the areas that we want to gauge public opinion on. And then we defer to the experts at St. Norbert's in terms of crafting those questions in a way that's objective and not leading. And then we release the report from the university, from the Strategic Research Institute in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
Results good, bad, or indifferent, and then use them as a point of discussion.
Well, after 7 years, you're going to be able to start seeing some trend lines as well. You're accumulating data.
That's right. Yeah, we have a number of questions that carry over from year to year relating to how people feel about their police and what the priorities of public safety and the government ought to be relative to public safety. And then each year we also try to identify some new questions, areas that are maybe emerging topics for law enforcement that impact public safety. And this year we did the same thing.
How concerned are Wisconsin residents about crime in their communities and what their local police forces are doing about it?
Well, when we started this poll 7 years ago, prior to that, you know, I think everyone has seen, you know, polls throughout the country, nationally and in the state, that, you know, ask people to rank their priorities. And usually the typical options are, you know, creating jobs, cutting taxes, education, the environment, you know, those sorts of things. We had never seen a question that included a public safety component. And we had an instinct that public safety would do well. But, you know, one of the reasons you do a poll like this is to either confirm or challenge what your preconceptions might be as an organization. And year in and year out, you know, fortunately, for us, we think. Public safety, keeping the community safe from crime, has been rated by the respondents in our polls far and away the top priority that they think our state and local governments ought to pursue, which makes sense. I mean, public safety is a core service, and it's awfully difficult to improve the education within a community and create jobs and encourage economic development if the community isn't safe.
In a number of cases, your survey looks at the differences between how white respondents and non-white respondents answer a question and the perceptions of policing based on race. When we look at that question about concern about crime in communities through this lens, how do the responses look?
Well, it's interesting. And we really have tried, again, as part of this effort to facilitate this public dialogue and keep it going, is dig deep into the results and look at the demographic differences, because we think that's fundamentally important to any effort to try and strengthen the relationship between law enforcement and the communities it serves. And there are distinctions between the white respondents and the non-white respondents in our poll. And we think that's something, it identifies an area that our law enforcement community needs to work on. It's clear that the law enforcement officers and the law enforcement profession, according to our poll, and in fact, according to national polls as well, is held in very high regard. And I think that's important for us to talk about, not only with the public, but with our members as well, because I think law enforcement officers, not only in Wisconsin, but throughout the country, feel that their profession is under attack. It's under a great deal of scrutiny. So, this is one way we can say, look, we've asked people, and they actually do appreciate the jobs that you do. But there are distinctions between white and non-white respondents. Non-white respondents, minority respondents, still hold officers in high regard, but there is a pretty significant distinction. And so, we ask additional questions to try and dig deeper into that and identify why that might be. And clearly, it highlights a preconception that a lot of people have that there are some trust issues that minorities in Wisconsin and throughout the country have.
Yeah, what do you mean by there are some distinctions that you saw in the data?
Well, we ask, how the local police force, we ask respondents, do you approve or disapprove of how your local police force does its job? Strongly, those that indicated that they strongly approve, 48% of white respondents indicated they strongly approve, compared to 27% of non-white respondents. And these results, for the years that we've dug more deeply into the demographic distinctions, that's been pretty consistent. When we ask, about the amount of time, spent that law enforcement spends in a neighborhood, overall, 72% of the respondents said it about the right amount of time. The percentage of non-white respondents say, it's about 52% of the non-white respondents say it's about right. So clearly, they want, and other questions confirm this, they want more of law enforcement present. But in some of the other questions we ask, relative to community policing, non-white respondents have a stronger interest in community policing. So, we can read the results of these various questions together and say, for non-white respondents or minorities in Wisconsin, they clearly want more of a law enforcement presence, but they don't just want, more boots on the ground, so to speak. They want community policing. They want, officers who maintain those relationships with the people in their neighborhoods, know their neighborhoods, and that they can develop those beneficial relationships.
Relationships, right. Jim Palmer is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. He's with us. We're looking at the state's police union that's released its 2019 Wisconsin Law Enforcement Survey. It measures how residents are feeling about a variety of policing and justice issues. Are you satisfied with the work of your local police force? What shapes your opinion of the police and your local officers? What do you have on your mind about policing here in Wisconsin? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So let's get into policy. You asked respondents to weigh in on what's called red flag laws, something that has the support of our state's Attorney General, Josh Call. And let's listen to him explaining these laws to WISN-TV earlier this year.
It's a law that would allow law enforcement or a family member to go to a judge when there's a clear danger, a clear threat that's being presented by somebody, either to themselves or to others, and to get an order that would temporarily disarm that person.
Jim, what did your survey say about the level of support for this idea here in Wisconsin?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, this is an issue that has become pretty prominent in a number of states, and to some extent it's been controversial in some of those states. It's a fairly new issue here in Wisconsin. Attorney General Call, I think, first talked about it in his inauguration speech. And so we wanted to gauge, you know, where public opinion is on this. And according to our poll, 82% of the public support such a measure. So we were surprised by that, only insofar as that's a really strong amount of support.
So do you intend to kind of keep probing that area? Like, what do you do with that type of data?
Well, you know, we've used this data over the years to help affect legislative change. You know, the very first poll we did 7 years ago asked, you know, how people felt about a law at that time, just a proposal to mandate independent investigations of officer-involved shootings, which is something that we supported. And we used those poll results to, you know, get that law through the legislature in the waning days of the 2013-2014 legislature. So, you know, asking these questions, these types of questions, can help, in our view, affect meaningful statutory change.
What about body cameras? Many departments have adopted them in recent years. Do the survey numbers indicate that their presence has increased trust between police officers and the public? Can we make any inferences there?
I don't know that we can necessarily make those inferences. However, it's clear that there's a tremendous amount of public support for body cameras. So, I mean, that would be, I suppose, one indicator. You know, we've asked this question about body cameras, you know, for five straight years. And in this last poll, 95% of the respondents in our poll indicated that they support it. And that is, you know, the highest amount of support that we've registered in the 5 years we've asked the question. And, you know, as more and more agencies throughout the state add the body camera technology to their officers, and this is an initiative that we support as a statewide organization. It's clear that the public seems to get it. They seem to, you know, recognize the value in having this video. And, you know, I can tell you, having represented officers personally involved in high-profile incidents and officer-involved shootings, to the extent that there were body camera evidence available, it was helpful. I mean, they're not a panacea. There are limitations to the technology, and that's something we can, you know, we should talk about publicly, but at the same time, it's clear that, you know, anytime there's something like an officer-involved shooting that occurs in a community, it is a dramatic event in that community, and it affects a broad array of people very deeply. And the ability to have some additional evidence and provide more information than we otherwise might have, you know, really helps bring some resolution and resolve to that community and how they feel about law enforcement. At its core, law enforcement officers depend upon, you know, the trust of the public that they serve, and it keeps them safe as well.
We're talking about the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Survey that is out, and we're talking with the head of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, Jim Palmer. Stays with us. Your questions, your insights on policing in your community, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. What's on your mind when it comes to policing here in Wisconsin? Would you support alternatives to incarceration? If so, what options do you support? What do you think about the so-called red flag law, which would allow law enforcement to temporarily take away guns from a potentially harmful person? Call in, tweet us. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the new Wisconsin Law Enforcement Survey conducted by St. Norbert College. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the survey, 3 out of 4 Wisconsin residents place safety from crime as their top issue. That concern grows stronger among non-white residents. That's where we saw 87% of respondents who placed safety from crime as their top priority. Are you satisfied with the work of your local police force? What has worked in your community to build more trust between police and your neighbors? Is community policing the answer or something else? Join in with your perspective, 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. And the Wisconsin Professional Police Association Executive Director Jim Palmer stays with us. Well, let's look at immigration and this poll, which has been a really difficult issue at both the federal and state level. In his state budget proposal, Governor Tony Evers included a measure that would make driver's licenses available to people who are living in the country illegally. You asked respondents to weigh in on that. What did you find?
Well, we asked a couple of questions on this, and you're right. This is an issue not only in Wisconsin, but across the country. And the results, I guess one of the takeaways from our results, as we'll get into in a second here, is that it's clearly that this is very contentious. And that's not probably a surprise necessarily to anyone, but you know, we attempted to ask these questions in, as an objective and non-leading way as possible. And our first question was, you know, would you allow a supportive provision, law change, allowing undocumented immigrants to obtain a driver's license? And according to our poll, 60% of the public opposes such a measure. We added an additional kind of more restrictive question, whether or not they would support this driver's licensing issue if the license cannot be used to board a plane or vote. And to our surprise, and it's really almost inexplicable, the opposition increased to 77%. That's not something that, you know, we're necessarily can interpret at this point. We're going to have to, I don't know if it's because we, you know, made reference to boarding a plane or voting or what it is, but, you know, we looked at some polls that by groups that support this, such an effort in New Jersey, and tried to, you know, make them, those questions, our questions, more objective than theirs. And, you know, we didn't anticipate that the opposition would actually increase by making the question more restrictive. So, you know, I think the takeaway from this, aside from the fact that this is obviously a contentious issue, is that the groups and those that support such a measure here in Wisconsin have a challenge in terms of their advocacy. And they're going to have to, you know, dedicate some amount of time to, you know, informing the public. And this is something our own membership is very split on.
Have you asked about this before, this immigration topic?
No, this is a new question this year. So I'm sure, because the issue is not going away anytime soon, we'll be this will be a question that will carry over year in and year out. The poll seems to get longer each time.
Well, Dale called in to ask about the survey's responses on medical and recreational marijuana. Another really thorny issue is the question of marijuana legalization in Wisconsin. And State Representative Melissa Sargent has reintroduced a bill to fully legalize it. And here she is speaking last month at a Capitol press conference.
The palette for legalization of cannabis in the state of Wisconsin is far more popular than probably the ratings for most politicians in this building.
Okay, so do your survey results reflect what we just heard from the representative?
They would. Of course, I would add, you know, because I am an advocate for our organization and our members, that, you know, just because it's popular doesn't necessarily make it a good public policy. But according to our poll, you know, we asked whether, you know, the respondents thought that marijuana should be legal for medical and recreational purposes, and 46% of the public said yes. And that was an increase from last year. For only medical purposes, 37% said yes. And, you know, to our surprise on this question, only 16% of the respondents indicated that, in their view, marijuana should not be made legal in any fashion. So that there is a tremendous amount of support for legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin to some extent or another. And we've seen, you know, states throughout the country that have expanded their laws in one regard or another.
You've previously said that the Wisconsin Professional Police Association has some serious concerns about marijuana legalization here in Wisconsin. What are those concerns?
Well, the concerns are, you know, despite the fact that there are states throughout the country that have enacted provisions like this, there isn't a great deal of data yet to analyze. We don't know what their experience has been. There's some data to suggest in Colorado, for instance, that the number of traffic fatalities involving drivers under the influence of marijuana, you know, has spiked considerably. So that's a concern. The other probably more prominent concern is how does law enforcement regulate it? You know, if an officer is affecting a traffic stop and they suspect a driver is under the influence of marijuana, there's no roadside test in the way that there is for alcohol that officers can administer. And it doesn't exist.
As of yet.
Yeah.
It right.
Currently doesn't exist anywhere in the country. I think there's a pilot program going on in Michigan for some kind of oral test, but that hasn't been completed yet. You know, and the other thing is that, you know, the body metabolizes marijuana in a different way than it does alcohol. You know, someone can consume marijuana in one form or another, and it'll still be in their system to some extent days later. And so it really presents some law enforcement implications that are challenging. And so as it relates to this debate, you know, the entire law enforcement community is very concerned that, you know, these implications aren't considered. And we want to, you know, just because something's popular, we want to make sure we do it right.
What did the respondents have to say about alternatives to incarceration? What do we know about that?
Well, there again, looking around the country, there have been a number of states, both those controlled by Republicans and as well as those controlled by Democrats, that have enacted meaningful, you know, correctional reforms. So we wanted to look at that, and that clearly that's been a larger discussion here in Wisconsin. And, you know, according to our poll, there is a significant proportion of people that support expanding mental health treatment programs as an alternative to prison. In fact, 88% of the respondents in our poll indicated as such. And when we asked about reducing prison time for nonviolent crimes, 82% of the public supports that. So clearly there is a tremendous amount of public support for, you know, doing more to make our criminal justice system work a little more fairly.
Talking with Jim Palmer, he is executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, and we're looking at the seventh year of this statewide law enforcement union survey that was conducted by St. Norbert College Strategic Research Institute. It involved phone surveys of 400 randomly selected Wisconsinites. You can join in at 800-642-1234. So, Jim, what were some of the other big takeaways from this survey? What were some of those aha moments?
Well, every year we ask questions to kind of gauge the public's perception of the officer-involved shootings that occur in the state. As the state's largest law enforcement group, we represent year in and year out more officers involved in these situations than any other organization. You know, it's clear that there is a proportion of the public that thinks that a majority of the individuals shot by officers in Wisconsin are minorities, when in fact that's not the case. Last year, 52% of the individuals shot by officers were white. And in fact, the year before, it was over 70%. And so we think that's, you know, we can, you know, one of the value, the great takeaways that we can take away from, we can use for this poll for is to, you know, match those perceptions up against the reality. We're the only entity in the state of Wisconsin that tracks data relative to officer-involved shootings. And I know the Wisconsin Department of Justice is looking at this and may be implementing it in the future, but, you know, that's been the case for a number of years now. And so we find a lot of value in looking at the perceptions and then matching that up against the data.
I was going to say, as we wrap up here in the next few seconds, I'm wondering, what do police forces grapple with the most right now? What's the most difficult thing?
Well, the two biggest challenges facing law enforcement, and this is true in Wisconsin as well as nationally, is the ability to recruit and retain officers. You know, we have seen, and there's no data on this here in Wisconsin, but anywhere I go throughout the state and speak with agencies and chiefs and sheriffs, the number of applicants coming into the profession is just diminished exponentially. So that's a huge change. And the other major challenge is how we treat officers suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and how we take care of their mental health. Here in Wisconsin, we've already had six officers this year that have committed suicide. Mm. You know, for the last, I think, 4 or 5 years now, it's been the case that more officers have died as a result of suicide than they have in the line of duty, and that's very troubling.
Jim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Jim Palmer is executive director of the Wisconsin Professional Police Association. We've been looking at the new survey out, seventh year of the statewide law enforcement union survey. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.